that was a brand new program here at Kauai Community Radio. Wasn't that a load of fun? I just thought that was just grand. Thank you, Allison. The new show is called Wonderland. So tune in every other Tuesday. You'll be able to, Monday, you'll be able to hear Allison and her show, Wonderland. We're going to do a little setup here, but before I do that, I want to remind you that you're listening to Kauai Community Radio. That's KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea. We're getting ready for the Veterans Program.
Expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, volunteers, board, or underwriters.
And as we get ready, we're getting headphones on and the whole nine yards. We had a little bit of a traffic hang-up today here. We love living on an island that has one road, don't we? How about a theme song, you guys?
Freedom!
Well, this is Indigo, and I'm just running the board today because today is the Veterans in Paradise, the VIP program, and we have in the house Veterans Coordinator from Kauai Community College who will introduce the program.
Aloha, everybody. How are you?
This is Mahea Yamashita.
Hi, and Michael Estes. I will be here co-hosting for the show.
So how's everybody doing today? How are you doing, Michael?
Doing great, doing great. Although we almost missed our own show, that's never a good sign. Hopefully we'll do much better during the show today.
I think we took the Veterans in Paradise, literally. It's a beautiful
yeah.
day in paradise.
And it appears the traffic felt that way, too.
Well, my name is Mahea, and I'm the career transfer specialist at Kauai Community College. And I'm a part of the movement where we are encouraging more support out there in our community and awareness for our veterans, and to welcome my fellow veterans and military ohana to come on to Kauai Community College and check out some fabulous, exciting things that we have planned for this coming year.
Hi, and my name again is Michael Estes. I am a full-time student over at KCC, and I am also a veteran. I served in the Navy as a hospital corpsman, and I've been over at KCC now for a little over a year.
So today, we have some awesome guests joining us, and the first guest that we'll be calling in very soon is our special needs counselor from the college. Her name is Marilyn Hashisaka. And also we have a good friend of mine, Renata. She is a Kauai resident, and Michael, you want to talk about what Renata might be sharing with us today?
Well, it appears that Renata's father was actually in the, is that Army or Navy?
Army,
as a weapons officer back in the 70s and 80s.
60s, I'm sorry.
Okay, well, sorry about that. I guess he's a little older than I expected. My apologies. Renata, I'm sure you're listening. So, again, I'm a little mistake. Anyway, we're looking at videography, and when saying videography, is that basically a history, a video that she created, or?
There's actually a video on YouTube, and I'm hoping that Renata will share with our listeners that I think there's like four segments on YouTube that her father was actually interviewed. He's originally from Michigan, and Renata actually took up the talent of being well-known here on the island, especially, but she's traveled internationally, and she's a talented videographer, and she'll be asked her to share about some of those experiences later. And then our last guest is...
Our last guest is Susie Hay, which is the wife of Captain Bruce Hay, our commanding officer at Pacific Missile Range Faculty, or Facility, excuse me, PRMF, for the rest of you.
Yes.
I heard that you guys were going to be talking about what it's like to be a military family and to move around and stuff. Is that true?
That is true. The topic or theme for today's show is military spouses, military ohana. And if you're a veteran listening out there, especially to my veteran at home that would like to talk about or share about experiences serving overseas or serving while you have family in tow, we would love to hear from you today.
And that number to call in would be 826-7771.
Okay.
Now, I know that there are some military experiences you get to have as a military family when you're just in the military for a very short period of time. We were only stationed in Fort Stewart, Georgia, which is in Hinesville, Georgia. And it was my ex-husband's first experience ever south of Washington, D.C. It was enlightening for him, I gotta say.
Wow. I can't wait to hear more about Lynn's experiences.
Well, I'll tell you what. One of the things I do know, and I had the pleasure, even though I was in the service, of, you know, obviously your friends have families and those families are dependents. Even though they're not wearing a uniform, they are just as entrenched in the culture. And honestly, our military would not function well if it was not for the support system that the wives, the children, the extended families of the military that provide that. And I'm sure for a lot of our veterans on the islands here, they would also agree that it's their families that give them the strength to keep going and doing the right thing.
Definitely. And we have our first call-in guest. Aloha.
Hi, this is Marilyn Hashisaka calling in from KCC.
Aloha, Marilyn.
Hi, Marilyn.
Hi, Michael. Hi, Mahea. How are you?
Great. I want to tell you thank you on behalf of our Kauai Community College Ohana for showing up and representing. And can you just tell us who you are, what you do at the college, and anything else you'd like to share?
Oh, of course, I'd be happy to. My name is Marilyn Hashisaka. I fill two functions at the Kauai Community College. I am both a mental health counselor and a special needs counselor. So the function I can fulfill for veterans who are students, if you happen to have a disability due to your service or just in general, I can help you with accommodations that you might need at the college. I can also help you with mental health counseling. So if your disability happens to be of the mental health nature, I can help you with that. And I can also help you with accommodations that you might need.
Terrific. Marilyn, for our veterans who are students and those who are possibly going to be students too, how can we how can they contact you?
So you can reach me at KCC. I'm in the student counseling office. My phone number in the student counseling office is 245-8314. Or you can also just come to the student counseling office and ask to see me, Marilyn Hashisaka, and I can make an appointment. They can make an appointment up front for you to see me. I also take walk-ins, so if you happen to be here at a time when I'm not busy, I will be happy to come out and see you.
Mahalo, Marilyn. You got any other concerns for Marilyn?
Well, actually, I can honestly say Marilyn is a wonderful person. We've talked story more than once. We have a little bit in common. It seems that our roots were from the same area, so that gave us a little bit to build the beginning of a friendship from. Marilyn, question I have for you. Your former position before you came and joined us, and we're very grateful to have you at KCC. Could you talk a little bit about that and how that helps you in your new position with us?
Yes. Before I worked at Kauai Community College, I worked at Division of Vocational Rehabilitation. So I've had a long history of working with people with disabilities. I've been in the disabilities field longer than I care to admit, but I had a really good foundation and learning all about various disabilities at the Division of Vocational Rehabilitation. which is also a good source for people with disabilities. And I'm not sure about the Veterans Administration if they have their own, do they have their own agency for people with disabilities?
I do know that there's a couple of veterans at students at KCC who fall under that program.
Okay, so they're utilizing that through the VA.
Yes.
And I'm not sure where the Division of Vocational Rehabilitation would pick up and the VA would leave off. So I'm not sure if those services over, if they intersect.
And I'm
or if one leaves off and one picks up.
Well, I'm hoping if our VA comrades out there listening, Todd or Charlene, if you guys could give us a call and give us some information so we can hook up our vets to that resource. Marilyn, thank you for calling in, and you know, I look forward to possibly talking more with you in future shows. We have our next guest waiting on the line.
Thank you so much, Marilyn.
Yes, okay. Nice talking to you, Michael and Mejia.
All right. Aloha. Take care.
Aloha.
And we have our second guest. Her name is Susie Hay.
Aloha.
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 Could you tell us your connection here to Kauai and maybe share a little bit about our topic today on being a spouse in the military and anything else you want to share about what you're doing that's exciting here for veterans and our military families?
Oh, wonderful. I am married to Captain Bruce Hay. He is the commanding officer of the Pacific Missile Range Facility. We've been married for about 24 years now and been a military spouse almost that entire time. And I was talking to a friend of mine just recently, and she's a friend from way back when, and we were saying how much the military has, how much the lifestyle has really changed for us in those 24 years. There's been so much in the way of technology and benefits, that have really enhanced our communications on deployments and whatnot. When Bruce and I were first married during his first deployment, I remember it was letters. Maybe once every 3 months you might get a phone call, and our letters would be sometimes 6 weeks between letters, and we'd always number them because we wrote every day, but they didn't always come in order, and of course you didn't. If you're reading a letter, you might not understand what the person was talking about if they came out of order. And so it was just a very different time frame. I think we, as spouses, we were very much more bonded to each other back then because we had to really rely on each other a lot more because you couldn't, rely on getting an answer from your spouse. So if, something happened, you had to kind of take care of it on your own. Kind of really promoted a lot of independence and a lot of really good bonding.
Wow, awesome. Where were those places, were they all majority international?
The families are stationed usually, with the exception of those, the families that are forward deployed over to, say, Japan or the Middle East, most of us are still here on the mainland, and our sailors, they're either on the East Coast or going towards Europe, steaming towards the Middle East, or in my case, we were on the West Coast, and our sailors were going through Asia and then heading on to the Middle East. The last deployment that my husband did, though, it was very, very different from our first experience. We were actually able to instant message via Facebook, which was, it has its wonderful in that we are able to stay connected, but at the same time, there's, you have the everyday drudge that kind of goes into a lot of the conversations. And, of course, we had email kind of midway through Bruce's career, where we could actually email each other every day. And so you tend to be less reliant on the people that are physically with you and you can actually be more reliant on your spouse. But I think that kind of has it takes away a little bit of your independence if you're always trying to, have to run everything through with your spouse. When you're 6 weeks without an answer, sometimes 2 months without an answer, you tend to try to make your own way.
Right.
Susie, this is Michael. I have a question for you. I know that generally speaking, anyone who makes a career of the military, their spouse is as integral to their achievements as their own actions in uniform. My question is, what services or what sort of programs do the are provided over PRMF for dependents as to, you know, get them involved into the day-to-day affairs and be a support system for them?
We're a smaller base here at PMRF, so a lot of our services will come over from Oahu. We have over in Oahu, we have the Fleet and Family Support Center. We are very blessed to have wonderful professionals Navy-wide. You know, our demographics are such that we're most of our families, a lot of our families are, they start their families a little bit younger. They marry earlier, they have children earlier, they do it on less salary, and they do it away from their extended families. And so they are, you know, we have new parents, a lot of times you want to have your family around you that can help you, guide you, and give you experiences. Here we have to kind of rely on each other to be there for each other. And also, we do have some programs like the New Parent Support Team and a lot of family advocacy type of programs, whereas people can get classes and actual support with having new babies. There's lots of great classes through the Fleet and Family Support Center. A lot of the lessons you might learn with your family and through your extended ohana, if you were actually staying one place at home, a lot of those needs are kind of filled by a lot of the classes that they might have at the Fleet and Family and a lot of the social workers, et cetera, that they have through there.
Another question I have, and thank you, by the way, that was actually very very enlightening. The other question I have is, from your own experience, seeing that we are focused on, you know, not only the veterans generally on the island, but also specific to KCC, do you have any suggestions on how we could go ahead and better act to facilitate a connection with PRMF? I know that we do programs right now with our technology program that has been wonderful, gives opportunities. I'm wondering if you have any suggestions on maybe where we could do an outreach or what you think some of the dependents from the base may like that we can go ahead and implement.
We actually do have quite a few family members and active duty members who actually go to KCC. I think it's a great college that you have over there. The things that would make things easier for our families and our service members going through, one of the challenges that we have as military, a mobile military lifestyle, is that a lot of times credits don't always transfer. There's issues of residency, those type of things. You know, if those things could be smoothed over so that when somebody comes and they've had an involuntary move, that they can get started a lot quicker and maybe not have to pay those out-of-state tuition costs, that would be very, very helpful. Having, I think, somebody, and I don't know that you don't already have this, having somebody who specifically is really knowledgeable about the issues that pertain to the GI Bill and, transfer credits, et cetera, would be really helpful. We are always, one of the beauties of being such a small base is that we're able to really embrace our community around us. And so we're always willing to try as much as we can to have, anybody who wants to come over and help out our families and give them, as much outreach as possible is always very, very welcome. And we would, love to talk more about that.
Definitely. Susie, thank you so much for all that you're doing and for chasing me down when we were listening to Congressman Gabbert. I really appreciate it. I look forward to coming out and maybe making a connection.
That would be fantastic. We have lots of space, and we're glad to make those meetings happen.
Thank you so much.
All right. Aloha. Have a great day.
You too. Aloha.
Aloha.
Bye-bye. Aloha again to everybody listening out there, and you're listening to the Veterans in Paradise show. I'm Mahea.
And I'm Michael.
And I'm your board operator, the mystery person.
The wizardress.
And I feel very blessed and grateful to introduce our next speaker, our guest speaker, Renata Selden. Aloha.
Aloha, Mahea.
How are you, sister?
Oh, I'm doing great. How are you?
Good. And I asked Renata to come in and talk today in regards to the theme of our show today, which is showcasing military ohana people who are raised as military dependents, spouses, and Renata said yes. She'd come and talk about her experiences. And before I start, I was going to ask you to just briefly share what is your position in the community, what do you do, and then from there on, just tell your story, because at the end of the story, I'm sure people are going to realize why I asked you to come and talk about your experiences as a military dependent.
Okay, well, I'm a filmmaker, and I've been living on Kauai for about 9 years now, coming from Michigan. I've worked as a filmmaker on documentaries with networks like Discovery Channel and PBS and other programs like that, and other networks like that. And I think going back to being a military, what they call a military brat, that comes from being one that is involved with many different people. So you travel around with your family as a military child, going from one place to the next, maybe moving every 2 years, and assimilating, acclimating to new schools, new environments, and trying to fit in. And it made me someone who became curious of people, not just, you know, wanting to fit in, but became curious of people's lives. You know, who are these people that I'm, you know, trying to make friends with? And it made me become a storyteller. Turned me into a filmmaker, a documentary filmmaker. So my dad was in the 60s, was an African-American military officer, and we were stationed in Germany and Taiwan and all over Europe, all over the United States. We moved probably every 2 years and ended up in Michigan. And you found out... in fact, you contacted me when you saw something on YouTube about my dad, which I had just found out by Googling my father. It was something about the veterans project in Southfield, Michigan, where they told their life story.
It was awesome.
Project. Pardon?
It was so awesome. I was totally enthralled, and I think there was like six segments. But if our viewers wanted to view your dad. See your dad talking. What would they Google or YouTube?
His name is Felix Selden, and it's the Southfield Veterans History Project, and Southfield, Michigan Veterans History Project, and they basically go over their whole veterans, you know, history, starting from when they enlisted until, you know, when they retired. My dad retired as a lieutenant colonel in the military. And I didn't even know it existed. I didn't know it was online until I Googled it. It was pretty intense. One thing I do want to say about my dad, this is way before internet, but one thing my dad used to do, when we were separated and we were somewhere and we couldn't go with him, he used to send cassette tapes back, and he would tell us about his day, about his week, and we would get cassette tapes about maybe every 2 weeks.
That's awesome.
And it was so awesome. It was so awesome. It was amazing. And I still have them. And, you know, and then I started taping everybody I knew. I carried cassette tapes around with me and started taping my friends, but I still have these tapes of my dad, you know, daily activities when he was, you know, stationed somewhere where we couldn't see him for maybe a year or you know, 6 months or so. So,
do you have the machine to put the cassette tape in?
I still have it. It's probably in storage somewhere right now, but yeah, it's one of those old cassette, you know, the little cassette tapes.
Transfer it over to digital if you haven't already.
You know, it's in there in plastic bags, and you're correct. I have all those films, you know, because in the military in the 60s. My dad took millions and billions and billions of the films, the slides,
mm-hmm.
and the cassette. So, yes, I'm in the process of getting all that transferred over.
Awesome.
Because it's history and it's priceless. So, yeah.
You want to talk about... like, how many of you, the siblings, your mom, what was the day-to-day life when your dad wasn't there and then when he came back from a deployment?
Okay, so when he wasn't there, the day-to-day life was my mom was a school teacher, and she, we missed my dad a lot. I just remember missing my dad a lot, and I remember he left, there was a hat, he would leave one of his hats and a jacket. And he had it hanging up, and every morning I put the hat and jacket on before I went to school because I missed my dad.
Oh.
And we listened to the tapes. You know, we followed life. We life went on, but when he came back, it was like Christmas. You know, it was like Christmas. My dad, I remember being in Taiwan, my dad was, an officer. He was an African-American officer in Taiwan. And I know looking at the pictures, he was driven by, one of his assistants. And he would come home for lunch every day, and he taught me how to use chopsticks. And we'd have jiaozi at lunch every day. And that was my biggest memory of my dad, you know, being in the military. And as military officers' children, we got to swim at the officers' club swimming pool.
Nice.
Which is a little different than, you know, it was a different lifestyle. And you don't know it growing up. You don't realize that there's the separation.
Mm-hmm.
And especially being an African American, it's really confusing. It's really confusing. I didn't know the difference until I moved back to the United States. I didn't know there were African American people until I moved back to the United States. I didn't know there was a difference.
So Renata, when you were away, deployed with your father as a family in Taiwan, was there a separation in these officer quarters or facilities that you used with other officer children?
But they did a good job of integrating though.
Mm-hmm.
I know that one side they're separated by living. One side was enlisted and one side was the other side. But we did integrate it. School and we did integrate in playing, so you know to keep it even that way. My mother again was a teacher there, so yeah. But Taiwan was my biggest memory. And when I moved to Kauai, I remember getting off the plane and thinking, oh my gosh, I'm reliving my childhood, but the air, the greenery, the beauty, it reminded me of growing up in Taiwan.
Quick question. As a person who did grow up as a military brat, as you said, and that usually is the term used, so I'm not being derogatory.
Yeah, yeah.
How do you feel that, you know, basically gave you some of the foundations on how you perceive the world?
Good question. You know, I'm so blessed to be able to have been able to see the world from outside of the United States, because people don't live like we do in the United States. I think I've been given a much broader view of you know, just the way people, the material aspects of how people live, and at the same point knowing that we all want the same thing. We all want to be loved, we all want to give love, we all want a house over our heads, we all want to eat, we all want to be good in the community, You know, we're all the same, and yet we all are, have different lifestyles, you know, and that's a good thing. I, as a military brat, I think I have this wanderlust too, where I've traveled all over the world, and I've lived here 9 years, and I still have this need in me to move and to see more of the world and to experience more of the world. And I'm fortunate for that. I'm blessed. Not many people get to get on a plane and experience other places.
Yeah. Awesome.
I have a quick question for you. I used to fly in NASA aircraft and government reconnaissance aircraft doing ice and ocean safety things. So I've been to a lot of military bases.
Uh-huh.
And I know this is kind of a weird question, but I asked my uncle this. All my cousins, they are all military kids. My dad was the only one that didn't stay in the military. And Fairbanks, Alaska has a lot of biracial couples. And my uncle was telling me that there are some bases where that are more friendly than other bases for that kind of thing. And have you ever heard anything about that? Or, you know, I know as a, you're an officer, so you were an officer's child. I think we had a lot more people who were non-coms.
This is the 60s, and my parents are both African-American, and, you know, we didn't run into any other African-American people.
I thought it was interesting, your comment that you didn't realize there were African-American people until you got back to the mainland
it's
of
true.
The United States.
It's true. We were it.
So when you guys moved back to military bases here in America, in U.S., like, what was that like for the first time for you?
Mount Clemens, Michigan. We lived there for a little bit. That was, it was very stark. Military bases are very, you know, they're stark. You know, you have your, I remember the funnest part was having the movie theater and the bowling alley and the PX, and everything was right there where you needed. You didn't have to go outside of the base. You know, everything was right there. We enjoyed that. Our school, you know, was right there. Everything was right there. Swimming pools, everything was right there.
Awesome.
When we lived off base, some of the places that we lived, which was fun too, because we needed to, you know, see the real community. But being an officer's kid, you're kind of cloistered, you know, in this environment. That where you're protected and things it's a different world that people, I don't know, it's like being in a private school, I guess. It's a private environment.
Yeah, that's the way of putting it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. One thing I remember a lot about, I was so jealous of my cousins because whenever you went to military housing, there were lots and lots of other kids.
Yeah. Oh, there were lots of kids to play with. Oh, my God. And you could just go out and you never had to be seen until it got dark.
Yep.
And you just go out and play. You go to the swimming pool and you never came back until the lights went off.
I had cousins, who lived on Schofield and... you know, unfortunately, I had Kolohe side of my family. So it was like being lost in the woods for real. I mean, we had so much fun on mopeds.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, you kind of knew what they did. They knew where the MPs were and where we could kind of, you know, just roam. So it was a different world.
Yeah. And you did feel, I remember feeling protected. I mean, there were boundaries. You didn't go past, you know, boundaries.
Quick question. When you were a dependent. Was your father in the service the entire time that you were a minor, or did he retire while you were still a child?
He retired when I was 19, 18.
Okay. So then what I'd like to know is that when he did retire, how was the transition for you from being, as you said, in almost this, you know, private school environment to just being in the general public?
Oh, well, we were in Michigan, and I went into something that was kind of similar. I went to a high school that was called Cass Technical High School, where it was another cloister environment where there were kids from all over. You had to have A's and B's to stay in. It was very biracial. It was, there were kids who were, you would think that you were in a military environment, only because the kids came from all over the place. It was kind of like New York in Detroit, a little mini New York in Detroit. So I went from being a military kid out in the world into being, you know, in this little environment in Detroit. And then I went from that to New York, you know. So, and my life has always been that way. I think I'll always have the military, you know, seed in my soul. I'll always want to travel. I'll always want to know different people and, you know, be a part of different people's lives and know people's stories.
Are there anybody in your family that followed your father's footsteps and joined the military?
My brother did, and he did, and he came out.
Okay.
And he went in and he went out. he went into real estate. I think he wanted to follow the footsteps, but it didn't work out for him.
That's exactly what my cousin did.
And
got into real estate with his dad.
Yeah. You know, I think my father, he hit it at the right time. He was very fortunate, you know. To be an African-American man at the time that he was in, to get the situations that he was able to get into were just unheard of at the time.
Actually, I agree. Sorry for interrupting you. I totally agree. And I don't know if everybody else is aware of it, but I'm a little bit of a history geek at times. And Colin Powell is about the same rank as your father and about the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So that gives a perception.
Perspective.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I want to reiterate this because I heard her father's interview, and he was an ordnance officer, which is, you know, he talks about it. It wasn't something that they readily, you know, gave that kind of responsibility to African Americans. And that's very impressive that your father had that much responsibility at the time.
He's a smart guy.
Yeah, obviously.
Smart guy, yeah.
smart daughter, too.
Oh, yeah.
thank you. I'm so glad to have you on the show. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Is there, you know, as we wrap up here with the time that we're very truly grateful for you calling in and taking time out of your schedule, is there anything else you want to share or say to our viewers out there, our listeners?
No, I just want to say, you know, one more thing is that my dad does do a lot of work to help the veterans in Michigan, homeless veterans. It's much needed. All over the place.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to thank you for the work that you're doing here. So that's all I want to say.
Well, hello, Michael. You got anything for Renata?
No, I really appreciated you sharing a little bit about your life and your father's life. And hopefully I'll get a chance to see you sometime on the island. But could you go ahead and give us one more time? Somebody wanted to Google and go ahead and take a look at those videos.
Sure. It's the Southfield Veterans History Project.
Southfield Veterans History Project.
Right.
All right. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you. Aloha.
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 Okay.
Well, you're supposed to keep talking while I'm over here pushing buttons. I mean, seriously.
She was doing the yoga button pushing.
Enlightened button pushing.
There
it's
you
very
go.
Zen-like, yes.
Well, I think we're going to break in a bit, and then we're going to ask our listeners to call in. And Michael and I, on the way up here, were discussing about the recent happenings in the VA hospitals and facilities. And I was fortunate enough to be a part of the outreach that Congressman Gabbard did last week. And just want to do a quick shout-out like I did at that meeting. I think that all of our CBOC staff here were very fortunate for their dedication and their passion, especially being in a rural community and helping our veterans. And I shared that with the Congresswoman and those people who participated in her outreach. And my question before I turn over to Michael is to ask you folks, you know, how do you feel about our VA health services here on Kauai in regards to what's going on in the nation? Michael.
Absolutely. We'd love to hear from you. I can tell you that I personally have witnessed some of the goings-on at CBOC, and as far as their rural outreach, I know that it's considered to be a model for other rural programs in the country, so I'm very proud of what we're doing here on that. And from everything I've heard, our mental health side of it is also doing an exceptionally good job, because a lot of our people that are veterans that are homeless, they have either been undiagnosed and they may have a mental health issue, or being homeless may precipitate a mental health issue. So definitely kudos for both of those programs over at CBOC. And, yeah, we'd love to hear from anyone, good, bad, or indifferent, preferably if you know, you know, somebody who is a veteran, if you're a veteran or you just want to talk.
Or even if you just want to talk about hanging out, what it was like being a kid as growing up.
Absolutely.
Yeah, the number here is 826-7771. That's 826-7771.
Or if there's something that you heard that was enlightening or something more thoughtful, you want to continue on with what our guests had shared earlier, Susie Hay, Mahalo, Renata Selden, and Marilyn Hashisaka from the college, please call us here.
And we're not supposed to allow dead space, so Lynn, are we going to that music or no?
No, I just wanted to reiterate again how much fun it was when I was a kid. See, my dad was the only one that didn't stay in the military, and all the other uncles and aunts, you know, the aunties married the uncles who were in the military, etc. When I used to go hang out at my cousin's house, I was so jealous, because my street where I lived, you know, we had kids, but we didn't have kids. I mean, we didn't have children everywhere, every age. I was so jealous of my cousins, I have to tell you. And they would tell me, they were so jealous of me because I got to stay in one school for the whole time I was growing up. And I kept reminding them, it just meant that I was so used to seeing everybody's face that I just really didn't want to go out with any of them ever when we got to high school.
I kind of had the same feelings, too. I was in, like, 8, 9 years old, fifth, sixth grade, and we used to hang out with my cousins in Schofield, and they had the best mango trees. It was, like, loaded.
And swimming pools.
I mean, I remember spending so much time with my cousins swimming at the pool. It was awesome. It was terrific.
Up in Alaska, there's our own lake outside of North Pole, Alaska.
I can tell you that over at Schofield, now it's still the same. You still see many, many, many families, young families with a lot of kids. They basically designed it so that they would be on cul-de-sacs. So they have a safe area amongst the houses to play. And, yes, the facilities from last time I was there, just wonderful.
The one thing I do remember I thought that was odd was that my auntie, she told us that we had to wear a T-shirt because there was a dress code.
I forgot about that. That's
like
right.
Like, we couldn't wear our bathing suits. We had to have shorts that, you know, that covered at least kind of a little bit above the knees, and we had a T-shirt that we had to wear. So that was kind of weird.
Well, I mean, you are on a military base, even though it is a small town, and I mean that even in times of in terms of total population. One of the things that Lynn mentioned earlier was that some she was under the impression that some bases are more receptive to biracial families. Having that I am from a biracial background, I can tell you that when I was in the military, that was very real. When you go ahead and set up for what they call in the Navy is you speak to your detailer, basically who's going to go ahead and get you your next assignment. You really do, if you have families and if you are someone who has a biracial or a multiracial family, that is one of the considerations. Because, I mean, after all, you don't want a situation where your family is not going to be welcomed in the community. And that's not to say that that's the case so much on the base as it is perhaps a good example. I spent a good portion of my time over at Camp Lejeune, North Carolina. Part of the area surrounding that is Jacksonville. And there are good people there. Don't want to say there aren't, but then again, there is some of remnants of the Old South there as well. So, I mean, there is definitely a consideration when making those sort of decisions, how is it going to affect your family as to where you would want to go. Fortunately, here on our island, I don't think you can throw a stone and find somebody that is not of a multiracial background. Unless they're a visitor.
Yes, yes. So you talked about being a military child also.
Oh, no, no. This is when I was in the service.
Oh, okay, okay. But were you a military
No, but I had a lot of friends that had families, which was great around the holidays because I could go to their homes and still enjoy things like Thanksgiving. And unfortunately, being that I wasn't married, I so always got stuck doing duty on Christmas.
Wow.
But it was a really, really good thing. It was it's like just like getting a Hanaid here. Well, actually, that's not true. It's not as profound, but people do. They invite you into their families. It was wonderful.
Awesome. Awesome. Lynn.
So what do we got, Lynn?
Well, we had a conversation with a caller who feels that the military is overrepresented. In the media these days, and that we should be focusing our attentions elsewhere. And I was telling him where I'm coming from, which is I think that a lot of emphasis is on the military, engaging them for reasons that may not be ones that we all believe in, but that these people have served and they're coming back, and I'd like to help them transition in a way that they feel welcome and coming home.
Is the statistic correct that only about less than 10%?
3%.
3% serves in the military. I think that ratio in itself speaks for the need for more understanding of service and what does that entail. And, you know, about freedom, I'm not going to stand on a soapbox, but I think in essence the 3% being part of that hui. You know, I commend my brothers and sisters who have also taken up the responsibility to uphold the United States.
Well, I can tell you, as far as the caller, I wish that they had, you know, come on and stayed on the line. I have
I'm sure he would call them.
Well, if he wants to. I was going to say, I have absolutely no problem with that perception. 3%, yes, is the average for who will go ahead and serve. The issue that we've had, though, is we've had 11 years straight under multiple political organizations as far as who's been in the White House, 11 years straight of war. And you have, you know, a very, very small group of people who've chosen to go ahead and serve. And I guess most of them are from the middle to lower socioeconomic status. Part of their service, though, was a social contract that said for the 97% that get to continue living as though nothing's changed, we will make sure that if there's any, you know, issues when you come home, we'll provide you the opportunities for education. We'll provide you and your family the opportunity for other services that we provide others that do federal service. So unfortunately, though, you know, life can be very stressful regarding, you know, the psyche of an individual who's been in a warfare situation. So there are medical issues that we are now dealing with that we didn't have to in earlier conflicts because, frankly, the medical treatment that our soldiers and our servicemen in the Navy and the Marine Corps are receiving and Air Force are allowing them to not die on the battlefield. That has precipitated, you know, issues of dealing with long-term or chronic issues. So as far as the callers, you know, I can tell you that I did not, when I swore an oath, I didn't swear an oath to a ideology of warfare. I didn't swear an oath to a political party. I swore an oath at the time to serve and protect the Constitution. And under that Constitution, you know, there is a opportunity and, you know, a right for people who don't particularly have a great value for the military or veterans to have a voice. And I'm proud that that person has that opportunity.
Agreed. And we're soldiers. You know, it's not us that make the decisions really of where these wars are fought. But we do uphold principles. And I'd like to thank our Indigo Queen here for her talent behind the board. And thank you, Michael, for coming again out here.
It is a pleasure. It always is. And what about, what do we have? I'd rather call her the Indigo Sorceress, because without her, we'd be sitting here talking to ourselves and believing that we're talking to everyone else.
Oh, if we're a sorceress, I go for Sriracha.
Okay, there you go.
That's my favorite sorceress. So we've got just a couple minutes left. Maybe you could summarize just some of the things that Tulsi Gabbard was talking about in her outreach to veterans.
She immediately started in her outreach as a way of showing her concern for us, and that was very impressive. I mean, we really only have about 5,000 veterans here. And, you know, within 2 days, she got on a plane, came out here, and personally spoke to the people, you know, she's representing up there in Washington, D.C., and she was on her way out to, I think, Maui and then Oahu. And in general, she wanted to address that she's there. If we have any concerns, she also brought her liaison, Walt Kaneakua, as well as our liaison on Kauai, Kalana Finn. And Tracy Betts from Honolulu also came here. She represents the Veteran Affairs in the State of Hawaii organization. But if you folks ever, you know, would like to have, you know, maybe more of your needs addressed in regards to how you could, you need assistance, and you're not sure of getting the word out. I mean, you have CBOC. You can call me at the college. You can call Michael. And you can also, you know, reach out to Congresswoman Gabbard's liaison, Kalana Finn. And we don't have that much time to go over through our contact numbers, but by all means, just look up KCC and you can call us and we'd be happy to help you.
Yeah, one thing, before Michael goes, Congresswoman Gabbard has a Facebook page.
Oh, awesome.
And she does do town hall meetings where you can send in questions and she'll answer them. So if you're interested in hearing more from her and you do Facebook, I would highly suggest friending Representative Gabbard. Michael?
Sounds good. One thing I wanted to bring up that we haven't mentioned today, and the best point of contact that would be the Kauai CBOC, and that is our community-based medical clinic here on Kauai. There's something called Tropical Care or Tropic Care.
Oh, yeah. Forgot about that. That's coming up.
That will be next week, and you can contact them, find out the locations, KCC, Kauai Community College will be one of the locations that you can go to. And in Tropic Care, it's an opportunity to get both vision, medical, and dental care for free. The county has been very, very great, gracious. They'll be, during that period of time, running buses for free for anyone who wants to come into town or get to one of the locations. We have people coming from the mainland, stateside, medical doctors, dentists, optometrists that will be providing free health care for us here on the island. And the commanding officer of it is a Brigadier General. What's interesting, we're going to try to get him to be a guest on the future.
Yeah, next month.
Yeah. What is really wonderful is, just to show you how things work out, the Brigadier General is actually James Dyers, the Vice Chancellor who spoke with us last month's brother.
Oh, how cool. How interesting. Well, we're going to have to wrap up, and we have final.
Yeah. And I want to mahalo Susan Hay also again, and Renata, and Marilyn Hashisaka.
And coming up next, I see we've got Jazz in the house. Richard's here. All right. He's my favorite jazz DJ. Don't tell Cousin Rich, okay?
He's my favorite.
We'll see you next month.
I'm just trying to be a father, raise a daughter and a son, be a lover to their mother, everything to everyone. Up and at 'em bright and early, I'm all business in my suit. Yeah, I'm dressed up for success, from my head down to my boots. I don't do it for the money, there's bills that I can't pay. I don't do it for the glory, I just do it anyway. Providing for our futures, my responsibility. Yeah, I'm real good under pressure, being all that I can be. I can't call in sick on Mondays when the weekend's been too strong. I just work straight through the holidays, sometimes all night long. You can bet that I stand ready when the wolf growls at the door. Hey, I'm solid, hey, I'm steady, hey, I'm true down to the core. And I will always do my duty, no matter what the price. I've counted up the cost.
I'm out here on the front line.